listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. This is the Kenai Conversation. I'm your host, Sabine Pooks. The local food scene has been growing on the Kenai Peninsula, along with opportunities for farmers to market their produce locally. The Kenai Soil and Water Conservation District plays an instrumental role in working with old and new producers to encourage sustainable agriculture practices and loop folks in about opportunities for growth. In the last year, that's included information about coronavirus relief funding to producers who lost revenue during the pandemic. And the district has a change in leadership this year. Heidi Che is retiring as district manager, and she's here with us today. Hi, Heidi.
Good morning.
Good morning. Terry Diamond is the new district manager. This is her first month on the job, and she is also here with us today. Hi, Terry.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Lou Height is also here. She's on the board of supervisors and has her own farm, Eagle Glade Farms in Nikiski. Hey, Lou.
Hi there. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you all so much for being here. So before we talk about anything else, it would be really great to orient ourselves to folks who don't know what the district does or kind of what a conservation district is. It would be great to get some definitions. So maybe, Heidi, you wanna start? Can you tell us a little bit about the district and what you guys do?
Sure. Kenai Soil and Water Conservation exists to promote healthy soil, clean water, and sustainable agriculture. It's a quasi-state organization authorized by the state, established at statehood, so it's been around quite a while. It's one of the oldest organizations in Kenai, and it is locally controlled and governed by a five-member board of volunteers, all of whom have a connection to local natural resources, forestry, ag land, fisheries, etc.
So you mentioned that it was kind of established really early on. How did it come to be, and how did these kind of conservation districts grow? Because there are conservation districts all over the state.
All over the country. Mm-hmm. The history of conservation districts goes back to the Dust Bowl disaster. And when we realized as a country that unless we took good care of our soil, we would lose the capacity to produce food. Soil and water conservation districts came about at the same time as the Federal Soil Conservation Service, and the idea was to have a local link between local producers and the federal agency to encourage modern and sustainable farming practices. And so when Alaska became a state, we also got a soil and water conservation district. So we have now tribal conservation districts, and if you put the conventional and the tribal conservation districts together, we have several dozen across the state.
Wow, that's fascinating that that's kind of how it arose. That's really interesting. And locally, there's a district in Homer as well.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know how many others there are around Alaska?
Several dozen if you include all of the tribal conservation districts. Wow. But we have Homer, Kenai, Palmer, Wasilla, Salcha Delta, Fairbanks, and Copper River are the main soil and water conservation districts.
Great. So I'd love to hear about how each of you got involved. And maybe, Terry, we can start with you since this is your first month on the job as district manager. So tell us a little bit about yourself, about your background, and how you got involved with the district.
Well, my background is mostly in education. I worked for the school district for many years as a teacher and an administrator. And I left the district in 2016 and did some contracting and did that for quite a few years. My summer was always free, so I started gardening long, long time ago. And when I moved to Alaska in 1993, it was a different kind of a challenge because Alaska is a different kind of an environment from Wisconsin, where I'm originally from. And so I started gardening and did that in summer. And a couple years ago, I started going to market because I was growing way too many vegetables. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to just go to market, maybe pay for a little bit of my soil. And through that, I met Heidi. And she was always a great support and source of information for me. And usually I was seeing her at the market, and she was buying some of my goods. And then this last year, I saw this position posted. And because I was always intrigued by Heidi's position, I thought, you know, this is kind of interesting. And I think that it kind of came full circle for me because in my younger years, I always thought, oh, I wanted to do something with fish and game or fish and wildlife. That was always my passion. And so I applied for the position, and here I am today. And I'm just really glad to starting to learn more and provide support for our community in the area of agriculture and many other areas. So excited.
Wow. Can you tell us a little bit about the things that you grow in your own garden?
Absolutely. I grow a wide variety of fruits and vegetables, mostly berries and vegetables. I have, in the berry aspect, I have black currants, I have hascaps, and I have raspberries. The raspberry, I also sell cottage foods, so I make my berries into jams, and I have a couple of other specialty jams. And then I grow bok choy is one of my popular, huge, beautiful butter lettuce, beets, and broccoli, and cauliflower, and tomatoes, and cucumbers, and peppers, and all kinds of herbs. And I have a wide variety of things that I grow. I like to have the diversity and try new things. So.
No wonder you had so much that you needed to go to market. That sounds like a lot of variety.
It is. It's a lot of variety, a lot of sweat equity, but it's wonderful, and I love it, and I love supplying the community with some great fresh or vegetables that I grow.
Great.
So, yeah.
Lou, what about you? When did you get involved and kind of how did you come to the district?
pardon me. I got involved in 2011, 12, 16, 14?
No, you started coming into the office when you were just beginning to start clearing your land and plan your farm.
Yeah.
And I was always so impressed with the planning that Lou and her husband Steve did. But you joined the board in 2014 when you finally moved down here full time.
Yeah. I had a lucky house sale out of state, and I got some money, and so I bought some land. And we bought forest land. If I were going to do it again, I'd try to find something cleared, but that's water under the bridge, so I'm not going to cry about that. And we've been doing what people sort of call homesteading, which I cross my fingers and say, all right, because we cleared the land. We have cleared about 5 acres and are farming about 3.5 of it, and growing very much the same kinds of vegetables that Terry's been growing, but the last couple of years we've been transitioning to chickens. And right now I've got 19 very willing layer hens, and we've got 53 half-grown meat chickens. And we're enjoying the chickens very much.
That's great. So how did you kind of translate that your farm into kind of wanting to work with other farmers and be part of this district?
Farming can be a very lonely occupation, and it's a very complex occupation. And if we don't work together, we're none of us going to do well. Heidi was on me to join the district. I had actually known Heidi when she was one of the first people I met when I moved up here in 2001. And she had been on me for a while to join the district, but I wouldn't do it until we were living here, because somebody traveling down from Anchorage to give advice is not really a wise thing to do. I feel that it's very, very important for the people who are active in an endeavor to support the institutions that support the endeavor. And by doing that, to support the people around us. I'd love to be able to get people interested in starting some cooperatives and stuff, but we're still a while away from that.
Very cool. That's interesting what you're saying about it being kind of a lonely occupation, and to create a community must be really meaningful and useful and resourceful.
I think it is. I come from a long line of hermits, so it doesn't bother me to be out on the farm all by myself with nobody to talk to but the dogs and the cats and the chickens, but they don't say very much.
However, I think Lou would agree that building a community, a collaborative community of folks who share what they've learned, share their difficulties, share opportunities through events like the Farm and Food Fridays that we've been having monthly, except during the summer, that accelerates growth for everybody. So
it really does. And for me, it's paying it forward, because when I was newly married in Delaware, we lived in a rural community, and there were probably 50 elderly people. And to me, at that time, I was 21, elderly was like 35, who reached out and gave me advice and help and occasional plants. And, I pretty nearly everything I've learned from individuals who told me something that worked. And I am very happy to share knowledge. I think it's something that belongs to all of us.
Mm. Wow. Heidi, tell us a little bit about your involvement. Of course, you have just kind of finished up your role. You were with the district for a decade. How did you come to the district to begin with a decade ago?
Well, let's see. I had been in a completely different role as a community mediator and a family mediator in private practice. And I was looking for a way, like Terry, to contribute to the community, to build a more sustainable community, and looking for to get my toe in the water there. I started volunteering at Ridgeway Farms with Abby and helping her plant seedlings and transplant in the early winter. And I was reading a lot about sustainable agriculture. I was a pretty beginning gardener myself. When a friend of mine who was on the Kenai Soil and Water Board said, we really need a new district manager, and would you consider applying? And that seemed like exactly the right opportunity for me. I had just, I was part of a community group that had gathered together the data for the very first local food directory and beginning to build that network of local food producers. And so that's how it began.
I'd love to kind of get a sense of what a day with the district looks like. I think you guys have your kind of hands in so many different things. You have so many partnerships and work with so many different people. I'm so curious how the day-to-day actually goes. Kind of on any given day, are you doing a million different things? Are you having a lot of different conversations with producers? What does that work actually look like kind of within the district?
Well, I think Terry would agree that there's a lot of variety, and you picked up on the key word there is partner. We couldn't do much of anything without all of our community partners. So to put out the local food directory, to distribute that, to put on Farm and Food Friday, we're drawing on our friends at the Farm Bureau and Kenai Local Food Connection, et cetera, and the Alaska Farmers Market Association, et cetera, and to carry out the salmon habitat conservation work that we're partnered up with Fish and Wildlife Service and Fish and Game and the folks over at the River Center. So I would say there is no typical day, Sabine, at Kenai Soil and Water. I think Terry's nodding over there.
Yeah, when I interviewed, I asked that exact same question. What does a typical day look like? And I really didn't get a solid answer on that. And now that I've jumped in, I can see that there's just all these different things that you're working on, and all these different projects, and you block out your time to say, okay, I'm going to do this right now, and then I'm going to do this right now, and but I have to say that the partnerships have been, they've had a great impact on me, and seeing how these organizations on the Kenai are working together to make this a great place to live for everybody and to support our natural resources and our agriculture. It's just quite amazing to see that behind the scenes.
Sure. You mentioned the local food directory. I'd love to talk a little bit about that. We actually have a couple copies here in the studio that you brought along, and that seems to have grown a lot. I mean, how generally has kind of the growing and farming scene been changing, and how has the district kind of been keeping up with those changes? Maybe, Lou, maybe you want to talk about that a little bit from your perspective, kind of as a grower and as someone on the board. What have those changes looked like here on the peninsula?
They've been huge, especially over the last 20 years or so. When Steve and I started looking for farmland, we were told to go to Delta because Kenai was game land. And we said nonsense and stayed here and found something that we could use, and found that the person that told us that was also dead wrong. but now farming is accepted. It's recognized by the borough government as an important economic center and a growing one. In fact, farming is growing on the Kenai faster than almost anywhere else in the United States. I think we still have the highest number of high tunnels per capita of anywhere in the United States, which is sort of remarkable. And, you know, let's move the whole state down a couple of growing zones, thank you. you know, people no longer kind of cock an eyebrow when you say you're growing food for the local market. They say, oh, when can I get some? So the acceptance and the recognition of farming as a viable activity has just mushroomed. And mushrooms mushroom too.
That's true. I know a lot of folks who are either growing the mushrooms or want to be growing mushrooms. Terry might be one of those.
I might be one of those. Look for that next year.
So, Sabine, you're relatively new here, and there are other listeners who are, so you may not know that the reason that the Kenai Peninsula has the highest density of high tunnels in the country is because the Natural Resources Conservation Service started offering high tunnels as a conservation practice starting in 2010, I believe, was the first year. So they were pretty new when I came to the district. And what those high tunnels, and why did we get so many of them here? We got so many of them here because I believe the Homer community in particular had some key individuals, one of them being Kyra Wagner, who's now the district manager of the Homer Soil and Water Conservation District, who saw this opportunity and spread the word, and they caught on like wildfire because that community was really primed thinking about how can we be more food secure. So they were sort of ahead of the rest of the state, and people jumped on the opportunity. They jumped on it here in the Central Peninsula. We have local vendors like Kenai Feed who scouted the country and manufacturers to start carrying good quality high tunnels that they could sell and construct for folks here. And so the high tunnels, now that we have hundreds of them on the Kenai Peninsula, and that's allowed people to extend the growing season and to grow all sorts of things that they wouldn't be growing otherwise, and really has transformed agriculture here.
For those for whom this has been, for whom it isn't really intuitive, why are high tunnels a good way to kind of sustainably practice agriculture? Why is that a conservationist kind of way to be going about growing?
That is a good question. And Natural Resources Conservation Service has had mixed feelings about growing under plastic as a conservation practice. But if you think about it, it allows you to grow much more intensively and to manage your water, and your nutrients very intensively. In the Natural Resources Conservation Service world, NRCS is part of USDA, by the way, and they are a key partner for the district and have been from the get-go, the creation of districts. But in the NRCS world, plant health is a conservation concern, and you put up a high tunnel, you can grow healthier plants over a longer season. And then when folks get in the door, then they're also learning about soil health, nutrient management, irrigation, water management, and the whole suite of conservation practices that go along with high tunnels.
So when we kind of talk about the growing community, the farming community growing, what kind of farms are we talking about? Are we talking about small farms? Are we talking about large gardens? What kind of does that actually look like?
So numerically, during the last period of the agriculture census, we had 60% growth of the number of farms on the Kenai Peninsula, which is remarkable. That's the fastest rate of farm formation in the state. And the vast majority of our farms are under 10 acres, and a huge bunch of them are under 5. So your farm might be under 10 acres, but there's a question of, you know, how many of those acres are you actually farming? And farms are measured by the number of acres that are owned by that farm owner. So mostly we have very very small farms, very mixed crop, diverse farms, a lot of them focusing on direct sales to the consumer. Also in the numbers are counted our kelp farmers and aquaculture farmers in Ketchumek Bay come under these census of agriculture numbers, so there's been growth there. Hay is still a very large product on the Kenai Peninsula, just as far as agriculture products, and certainly in the last 10 years, we've seen a lot of growth and maturing of peony farms, just while we're tossing out changes over the last 10 years.
And what seem to be some of the, or are there growing pains that kind of accompany this growth? Obviously, you guys are focused on conserving soil and making sure best practices are followed. And I imagine that takes on a whole new importance when you're dealing with new farmers, farmers who don't know a lot about conservation, a lot about soil health, water health. Are there any kind of things that come to mind when you think of maybe the learning curve, Lou?
Yes. As a rule, it takes 5 years to go from wild forest to productive agriculture. You can speed it up a little bit, but not very much, because the wild forest has pretty inert soil. It's acidic, it doesn't have a lot of bacterial action, very few nice little ugly critters like earthworms, who are really quite cute if you really get down on the ground and look at them. It takes a while to build up the organic base that that soil needs to support plants, and it takes a while for it to build up the microbial and just above microbial fauna that support plants. And in the ensuing time also, there has been so much growth in understanding how plants and soil work together. There are mycorrhizae that are funguses that invade plant roots, but what they do is they take a little bit of sugar out of the plant root and put minerals back in. And plants without their mycorrhizae don't grow. So it takes a while to grow those also. So we're not just thinking about the pumpkin or the lettuce or the flower that's on top of the ground. We have to be thinking about what's under the ground also. And there are some really good books out right now about how plants think. And they do think.
And Terry, you mentioned a while back you decided to start selling your produce after growing it and realizing you had kind of this abundance. What was it like going from, you know, growing it to selling it? And did you learn anything from that experience that you're going to maybe use to help other folks kind of do the same going forward with the district?
Absolutely. I learned a lot of things as I was moving into that transition. I started out with just a tiny little table with just like 2 cucumbers and 5 tomatoes and a couple heads of lettuce, and that has grown. But, you know, you get to hear wonderful stories. And you also, you know, one thing that's really interesting is I get a lot of questions of what is it that you do with, how do you make that? What do you do with that? So those conversations are really great. But as you transition to that marketplace, you know, just when you're harvesting, you know, taking the time to make sure that your vegetables are clean and making sure that your vegetables are presentable, and, you know, pricing is always, it's not always a for-profit business. It's often a labor of love, because it takes an awful lot of time to make sure that everything is good and, like Lou said, that your soil is right and that your watering is right, and You know, we have those challenges of the cold nights up here for some vegetables. So just taking the time to go to, I think if you're wanting to move into a farm, into a market situation, go to some of the markets, talk to some of the vendors, and see what they're doing and what they think. And eventually, as I've been starting to go, I'm learning, you know, there's so many people growing zucchinis. And of course, they produce so well up here. So maybe I don't want to have a bunch of zucchini plants because I can't get rid of those zucchinis. But you can always donate them to the food bank and donate them to the senior centers and that type of thing. So that's always a good deal. So yeah, but it's a transition going from farming for yourself and your own sustainability to sharing that with others.
Mm. Now, you know very well that zucchinis reproduce in the refrigerator overnight.
I think they do.
I see the car.
And they get larger and larger and larger, right?
That's really funny. Lou, I have to ask, you're wearing a shirt that says Alaska Women in Agriculture. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, as we're talking about more people getting into farming and growing, if you're also seeing more of a kind of a diversity of folks getting into farming, I think, speaking from what I think of when I kind of think of farming, I think historically it's been very white, very, very male dominated. So how do we kind of make sure that the folks who are getting into this business and who are, you know, growing things are coming from a variety of backgrounds and identities and experiences?
Well, my shirt, you notice the 47% on my shirt.
Uh-huh.
That's the percentage of farmers in Alaska who are women, which is, that's really pretty good.
The highest in the country.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We don't have a lot of people of non-Caucasian ethnic backgrounds farming, but it's growing among the native population. Tyonek has a really good program. And the University of Alaska has had, I don't think they did last year, but they had several years of teaching community agriculture to people from villages.
In villages, I would say,
yes,
as well.
Yes, in villages. And, we have a few people of Asian background who farm. I can think of one woman who is a brilliant farmer who lives down near Kisilov, but will remain unnamed because I didn't ask her if I could name her.
Her business is in the local food directory, Lou, so yeah. I think we could mention that.
Okay. It's Alaska Farm Fresh.
It sure is, yeah.
And, and part of that is because this actually is a very white community. Now, in other parts of the country, people of color are getting involved in urban agriculture. In Anchorage, there's a big community garden near Mountain View where most of the people are people of color who are farming their little farm plots and doing a brilliant job of it. On the peninsula, we haven't needed to do urban agriculture. But, my daughter's always on me, aren't you going to move back east? I'd like to have you in Philadelphia. And I told her she has to get me a couple blocks of abandoned houses to turn into a farm first.
That reminds me, I have a friend who works for Seeds of Change in Anchorage. And do we know of any folks who are doing hydroponics down here, or is that maybe not necessary? Heidi, you're nodding your head.
Oh, yeah. Well, we have a very successful year-round hydroponic garden right up there on Whistle Hill in Soldotna, that Fresh 365, and that's producing wonderful herbs and lettuces and kale and selling to local restaurants and providing for their own restaurant, Addy Camp, and also individual sales, by the way, to quite a few. And in this year's local food directory, there's a new hydroponics business here in Kenai, and Seedlings of Alaska. It's right here in Kenai. They're doing microgreens. I believe that's hydroponic. I could be wrong on that.
I've got to think for a group that's really concerned about conserving soil and water, that hydroponics is a really exciting thing, huh?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's perfect for very fast-growing things like herbs and greens. And in areas where you've got very inexpensive electricity, it's well-suited. So So hydroponics, definitely a thing in Anchorage and here on the peninsula. And there are other hydroponics businesses in Homer as well.
And there are a number of people doing hydroponics privately. The physical therapist that just opened Fortitude Physical Therapy has a very large hydroponic greenhouse. I don't know if he's selling, but he's really into it.